check it out now.
Thursday morning, September 26, 2024. It's the Beating the Book podcast, week number 4 in the NFL. It's Gil Alexander. Not a good first 3 weeks for me. Not a good first three weeks for Willie. Will Hill, one of the staples of this show, of course. You can follow him on Twitter at Not The Will Hill. Should have been more podcast. But Todd Wishnev's doing pretty good, even though you had a 1-2 last week as well. Todd Wishnev from the Showtime docuseries. Action at T Wishnev. Toddy, you are just going to warn everybody. Todd has not eaten and he went to Starbucks. So you could be Meshuggah on this show, right? Is what you're saying in advance?
Basically, most people will be thinking I just railed three lines of cocaine because caffeine has a certain effect on me. And you're going to think that I'm on coke. I'm not. It's just because I've had no calories and I've had a lot of caffeine. But you've all been warned. So whatever.
Okay. There we go. There's our warning. On the show today, one of our favorite guests, he's kind enough to come on the Megapod. Well, he's on a numbers game every week. That's the first thing, for not one, but two segments. But he's kind enough to come on the Megapod twice a year, once during the regular season, once we usually have him when he can accommodate during the playoffs. And obviously, we do tennis podcasts together as well. He's the co-host of Not One, But Two podcast, NBC Sports Bet the Edge with Jay Croucher. And also, of course, Dinsick Classic, The Deep Dive with Andy Molitor. It's Drew Dinsick, everybody, at Whale _ Capper. What's happening, Drewski?
As always, it's an honor to be invited and participate in the Megapod. And you guys are looking great. Hopefully, I can help turn the season around. The Bengals this week probably turning their season around, hopefully. So it is funny, though, watching with the video quality we're getting from Todd right now. His eyes do look like perfectly, like 100% dilated, like pupils just going like all the way out. So, yeah, I was wondering what was going on there, but I guess it's the caffeine.
Yeah. Drew is very kind also because Drew just came back from a Greek vacation where he looks beautiful. And I was just saying before he got here, I said, I've never looked worse. Look at me. I'm exhausted. What's happening to me? I'm dying.
NFL is a grind, man. 3 weeks in and you're already feeling it.
Oh, it's awful. All right. So we usually do this a little earlier on Thursday. But Drew couldn't get off a call. Drew has another life that he does. And I know the people are like, oh, just give the picks. I just want to have this one conversation with Drew because I think it's fascinating. Drew is, I hope you don't mind me saying it like this. You'll correct me if I'm saying it wrong. Drew is a seismologist. And we were sort of texting back and forth. He couldn't get out of a meeting. So we had to do this a little later today. You have seen something that even though it's not football prognostication, I find fascinating. I wish we could bet on this. Can you explain what you are seeing these days, sir?
Yeah. Earthquakes hot in the streets in LA right now. You mentioned I was traveling international recently. I was at LAX Thursday morning the week before last, and I'm a consulting engineer. So basically, my job is to help the structural engineers design the buildings so that there's safe performance during the earthquake. And we were at LAX, and ground starts shaking, and I'm like, oh wow, this is cool. Like I get to see like how the structure performs, like sitting there in the terminal, like, oh, this is great. And then every single cell phone in the entire terminal gets the warning at the same time, like, like ground shaking, earthquake is happening, seat cover. And I'm like, okay, maybe this isn't as cool as I thought, because number one, I don't love being in the public space for this. And number two, I hope this doesn't ruin our trip. Ended up only being just under a magnitude 5, happened in Malibu, but it was notable. And you kind of look at a pattern. Recently, we've had 3 of these now this summer, and they've all been relatively close to high populated areas on different faults. And we're coming up around sort of the time when you would expect another earthquake in the LA basin. They happen about every 30 years, and the last one to occur was 1994 in Northridge, at least in terms of real big consequential earthquakes. So, everybody is very keyed on earthquake safety right now, and I think it's good when you have the small ones because it gives everybody the opportunity to think like, okay, what's my plan? Do I have enough water? Like, how am I gonna get my kids from school or whatever? It's good to just sort of have everybody go through the mental exercise of being prepared for this sort of thing, because you never know.
So you are, and I don't want to hold you to a prediction here, but you are basically saying, so for those of us who lived at any amount of time in California, and also for those who haven't, you're aware of this, I think, 1989, San Francisco, obviously the Bay Bridge collapsing during the World Series between the A's and the Giants. That got all the headlines, and rightfully so, by the way. The marina was on fire. People lost their lives on the Bay Bridge. It was chaos during the game. Al Michaels with the famous audio. But for those who were both in the 89, that's called the Loma Prieta earthquake, as you know, Drew. And then 93, the Northridge. I guess these are named after the fault line. Is that what they're named after, or just where the epicenter?
They tend to name them after the community that's the most directly impacted. And that's usually either the most populated community right over the fault or near the epicenter. Yeah. So Northridge, it ended up being the Northridge fault. They didn't know a fault was there until it happened. and they named it the Northridge fault. that's kind of how it goes.
So people who I know who were in both, and again, this is depends on where you were, obviously, but anecdotally, they were like, oh, the Northridge one was way worse. Like, they were like, stuff was coming off the walls, you know, in their apartments, and it was just, it's terrifying. Now, you sort of said it casually, but again, if you've lived in California, anything in the fours and you know, low fives on the Richter scale, we kind of don't blink anymore if you've been through enough of them. But once you start, like, six, what you were just talking about, I think, if that is to happen 30 years from Northridge, like, that's some serious shit. And that's, I don't want to say you're predicting it, but you said the tectonic
I have a good betting story that comes.
Yeah.
Gilly, I have a good betting story that comes with one of my earthquakes. Well, I was living in LA from 2001 to 2015. And I remember on a college football Saturday, I'm at the same place I was for the Yom Kippur Massacre story. I'm watching the game and the place was shaking. I think it was only like a 4.7 or something, but it was shaking serious. And it wasn't the first earthquake I'd been in LA, but I was like, can this stop shaking? There's 2 minutes left in this game. What is going on here? You can't have an earthquake now. I'm about to just bet.
Todd, you have two earthquake stories. You remember the second one.
Oh, the other earthquake. Of course, that was a Hashem special. In Las Vegas, we went to the game. Mystics Vegas Aces a couple years ago. We had the Mystics pick them. At halftime, they're up like 15 points, and there was an earthquake in the desert in California that affected LA, that affected Vegas a tiny bit. It wasn't even that bad. We're in the MGM Grand Arena, and I'm like, well, they're not going to end this game, are they? And screw my
during kid. Summer League, because I remember that.
Mystics. And they're, all these little girls are like, oh, like they're worried the scoreboard's going to fall. I'm like, get another 10 girls. We got girls on the bench.
I said to Todd, I go, you know, the scoreboard could fall on these girls. What are you talking about?
Get another 10 girls. We got tons of girls on the bench. It's Mystics pick 'em, and I'm up 15 at the half. It was ridiculous. And I'm watching. They've got guys in suits coming out. They're looking at the floor. This is going on for like a half an hour. I'm like, oh my God, this is unbelievable if I lose this bet. So finally they decide after they could have played the whole second half in the amount of time that they did to inspect. And then they call the game. And I am literally apoplectic because I have an easy winner, and on top of that, I didn't even get refunded for my tickets. The Aces didn't even refund. I was so mad. I was like, only this could happen to me, an earthquake 200 miles away.
To put a bow on this, this is just to go to say that, you know, that all of your points are fair, Gil. Northridge was 10 times worse than Loma Prieta for lots of reasons. And Southern California, much like the Megapod, we are due.
We are due. Much like the Megapod. Nicely done. Good segue. And by the way, this Drew sort of letting me know this, while Major League Baseball completely has botched their last week of the season
with the
final two wild card spots in the National League with Hurricane Helene, which the difference between earthquakes and hurricanes is we know the hurricanes are coming, but Major League Baseball apparently did not get the memo. So let's turn it around. We are due, as Drew said. Todd, the records are what?
Well, the records seem to be very similar to last week, with a gigantic lead by one big T. That's me. Gilly came into the week at 1-4-1. We all called for the regression after his amazing season. We all knew it wasn't for real. We all knew there was no way Gil could keep up this torrid streak that he had last year. And guess what, folks? Reality has set in. He is now 2-6-1 and a whopping 0-3 on his teasers. And that is surprising, because we've all been outstanding on teasers as of the last couple of years. Willie hits a Willie hits a 1-2 to go to 4-5. 0-3 also on his teaser. So this is shocking.
Wow.
And then I am at 6-3 after my 1-2 week, and I am 1-2 on teasers. Also not very good. And then the guest had a good week. Adam Chernoff held up his side of the bargain, going 2-1 with some nice picks, including the Commanders plus 7.5. That's Gilly's former team. Used to be called the Redskins, for those of you that didn't know. The guest is now 4-4-1 and 2-1 on the teasers. So we've got to turn it around. Everybody else needs to turn it around except for me. Thank you.
You need to turn it around so we can catch you. Dumbo of the week. We have two candidates for Dumbo of the week.
Yes, I want to. You do your first one, and save Raheem Morris for me.
I'm just going to set it up. It is a Nick Sirianni versus Raheem Morris duel to the end for Dumbo of the week. Okay. You want to do the Raheem Morris? I'll do the Nick Sirianni. The Nick Sirianni was simply a body of work in what ended up being Philadelphia's 15-12 win over the Saints, but probably could have been way bigger than that. By the way, Philadelphia outgained the Saints in that game 460-219 in total yards. But there was any number of situations in that game where, first of all, you know, Hurts got picked by Tyrann Mathieu earlier in that game. But just in terms of coaching decisions, 4th-and-1 for Philly. Down 3-0. This is a scoreless game. 4th-and-1 for Philly at the New Orleans 46. They opt not to do the Tuchus push, which they invented and perfected. Hurts to Goddard for 6. They converted it, and then 2 plays later, Hurts ended up fumbling. But that was the first sort of indication, like, wow, that's an interesting call. They didn't Tuchus push. So then it's 4th-and-1 at the New Orleans 15. This is a 3-0 game. 4th-and-1 at the 15. This is late first half. You're down 3-0. They show Tuchus push, but instead they hand off to Saquon. Little east-west thing, the portent of things to come in the Raheem Morris discussion. Tackled for no gain. So, again, they eschew the field goal there, and you're like, what are you doing, Nick Sirianni? Like, probably at some point
there's nothing like showing Tuchus push. I like what you said. They showed Tuchus push. Great call by you, Gilly. I love it.
Thank you. Third quarter, 4th-and-3 from the New Orleans 34, also 3-0. Hurts, they go for it. Hurts sacked by Brian Brisset, so that fourth didn't work out. Then fourth quarter, New Orleans finally tries a 4th-and-1, and they miss it. And by the way, Philadelphia, it made them pay for it because 4 plays later, Saquon scampered in from 65 out, and it was 7-3 Philly. So then New Orleans does take a field goal to cut it to 7-6. Then Philadelphia decides, after all these fourths where they went for it, they're like, hey, Jake Elliott, why don't you go out there and kick a 60-yarder? See if we can't extend this lead. Of course, he misses it. New Orleans takes over at midfield, and they end up, New Orleans does, taking the lead 12-7. Philadelphia ends up, they should have won this game. In the end, they get lucky because on a 3rd-and-16, with 1:16 to go, Hurts to Goddard for 61, completely bailed him out. Saquon scored after that, and Philly held on to win the game. But again, a series, at least 3 questionable 4th-down decisions, both to go for it and then to kick a 60-yarder from Nick Sirianni. He is candidate number 1. Raheem Morris, candidate number 2. Go ahead, Todd.
Okay, I'm putting this in with one of my really good in-gamers because it's all related. I think one of my best in-game plays of the week was Minnesota is trailing 22-17 in the Sunday night matchup against the Chiefs. They're down 5. They have some linemen injured already. They're having some struggle moving the ball. But they now have the ball. Atlanta. I always call Minnesota because Kirk Cousins. But it's 1st-and-10 at the Atlanta 11. And I'm looking at the Kansas City team total at 25.5 or 26.5. It's essentially the same number because they have 22 points. 3.5 or 4.5 at this point doesn't really make a difference. As soon as Atlanta gets the first down to go to 1st-and-10 at the Atlanta 28 with about 10 minutes to go, I'm saying to myself, I've got to play Kansas City under here. Why? Because even if Atlanta goes 3 and out, they'll probably be about 8 or 9 minutes left. And there's a good chance if the Chiefs will just try to run out the clock and at worst case scenario, get in Minnesota field area and kick a field goal to have 25 points. That's what I'm thinking worst case scenario is. So I say I've got to play the under 26.5, under 25.5. They were both about minus 125 at the time. So I immediately play it. And now we get all the way down because the Atlanta Falcons had a 15-play drive. They get all the way down with 4 minutes and 12 seconds to go. It's 4th and 5 at the Kansas City 8. And I text the guys and I say, okay, he's going to kick a field goal here, right, to go to 22-20, because then if he gets the ball back, he's got his timeouts. If he gets the ball back, he just has to get a field goal 23-22. At the same time, you're thinking, well, can you give the ball back to Mahomes with 4 minutes left? But we all agreed he's going to kick the field goal. Is that true, Will? Did we all agree that he was going to kick the field goal?
I thought like 60-40, 70-30, he'd kick it, because I remember texting you guys before the third down play. It was like 3rd and goal from the 6 or 7. I said, if he doesn't get another yard, he kicks the field goal, right? And Gil said yes, and I was like, I kind of agree. And then he didn't. But I thought it was like not like 90-10, but more 60-70%. Is that fair, Gil?
No, I'm hoping he I'm hoping he kicks the field goal to go to 22-20, and then Kansas City just tries to run out the clock, and there's almost no chance of overtime. There's no chance of any trouble. I don't want him going for it, because if he goes for it and he gets it, now they theoretically could get a touchdown, get a two-point conversion, go up 25-22, then Kansas City could come back and tie it 25-all, and then all of a sudden my team total is in danger. So, of course, to torture me, the guy goes for it 4th and 5. Now, that wasn't the worst scenario yet by Raheem Morris. I thought that was questionable, but okay, I'll give it to him. Now,
by the way, let me just interrupt you for a second. That was a fourth, just to give the detail. That was 4th and 5 at the Kansas City 6 with 4:08 to go, where Raheem decided to go for it. It was the incomplete pass intended for London in the end zone, where the PI was not called.
Right. And by the way, I know everyone says the Chiefs get every call. Yeah, in the first half, Chris Jones got called for roughing the passer when he couldn't even see the quarterback. So,
I agree.
Do me a favor. Calm down with your Chiefs nonsense. Okay, so the Chiefs go out 3 and out right away. And now Atlanta's got the ball again, 2:26 to go. And the whole time we're going down, I'm texting the guys, don't score too early, Raheem, because if you get a touchdown to go to 23-22 and you miss the two, or even if you make the two, you don't want to give Mahomes a chance to get an easy field goal to tie it or win the game. So slow the hell down. Of course, Raheem Morris can't hear me, even though I'm screaming it to him through the television, because they're already at the Kansas City 22-yard line with 1:44 to go. How about running the ball once or twice, Raheem? Slow it down. There's no need to get the score and let Mahomes go right down and get a field goal and beat you. What are you doing?
Right, but there was a series of Kansas City defensive penalties, though, that helped him matriculate. So part of that's, I get what you're saying, though. Okay. Okay.
You can mix in some runs. He doesn't want to do it. So now it's like 1:03 left. He gets a pass to London to the 11 yards. It's 3rd and 1 with 1:03 to go at the Kansas City 13. He calls timeout. Everybody on the text thread goes apoplectic. Why are you calling timeout with 1:03 to go on a 3rd and 1 in that spot? And even if you want to use your timeout to discuss the play, let 25 seconds run down and call the timeout with 40 seconds. There's no need to call timeout and save time for Atlanta. I mean, for Kansas City. What are you doing, Raheem? And I'm literally going to jump through the television and just like strangle this guy. I can't believe that he calls timeout. Okay, fine. So it's 3rd and 1. He goes for no gain. 56 seconds left. So it's going to be 4th and 1. This idiot calls timeout when Andy Reid was trying to call timeout. Andy Reid is trying to call timeout to save time for the Chiefs. But guess what? Raheem beats it to him. Raheem Andy didn't realize how dumb Raheem was going to be. So he beats him to the timeout. Raheem's trying to give it to him. You can't make this stuff up. And by the way, these people make millions of dollars. Okay. Millions of dollars. And by the way, don't tell me they're such geniuses. No, Andy Reid, I'll give it to you all day. Raheem Morris, I guarantee you, any of us here watch as much film as Raheem Morris, we're not making that mistake. Okay, so now it's 4th down and 1, 56 seconds left. And Gilly, you can take it from here with a gorgeous play call on 4th and 1 from the Kansas City 13.
Hold on. Oh, yeah. 4th and inches at the Kansas City 13. We know that Cousins, not in the same way that Phillip Rivers never, ever snuck in his entire career. Like, there's a Zapruder film of one time when Phillip Rivers actually snuck. But Cousins is not a sneaker anymore, right? Like, we knew. So that play was off the table. And instead of just going forward, straight forward, try to get the inches, they do the old handoff east-west to Bijan. 3-yard loss, ball game, because Morris had used the timeout and the math no longer worked out. So that was that. That was the ball game. Over. By the way, Steve Fezzik, I want one postscript to this. Steve Fezzik legitimately, he's ridiculous. The man is ridiculous. He legitimately believes that Andy Reid should have been smart enough. I can't even say it without laughing. Should have been smart enough to know that Raheem Morris was that dumb that he would have called the second timeout.
But the truth is he was that dumb on the first one. So all Andy Reid has to do is look across the way and go, this dummy's going to do it to us again. Give us a free timeout. It's unbelievable.
If only we had had some indication that Raheem Morris was a better coordinator than a head coach. You know, we just had no idea that he didn't have the goods. If only we had some indication that the Falcons' decision making this offseason was not great. You know, like there was no way to tell. There was no way to tell.
No way to tell. Belichick,
I follow this Michael stuff Penix. And remember it pretty closely. I just draw a blank with the Raheem Morris first coaching tenure. Do you guys remember that well when he was a head coach? Was that the Josh Freeman era? To me, that's a blank spot for me.
Yeah, I don't remember it well either.
But he was terrible.
So I think we decided Raheem Morris is the Dumbo of the week. We don't even need to
put it. It's close though. Sirianni, it's close, but yeah.
It's close. Yeah. Okay. Way, are we ready for best bet?
The other quick one, just 30 seconds real quick on I've had real success on the third quarters. I talk about the third quarters all the time on the Megapod, but third quarter of the Giants game, it's 21-7 Giants. Browns getting the ball, start the third quarter. I don't want the under until I see what the Browns adjustments are at halftime, because the first half, they can't block at all. They literally cannot block at all. And Deshaun Watson has no time. I want to play under anything under 7.5 here in the third quarter, but I'm scared to play it at halftime because the Browns are going to come out in the first drive. As soon as the Browns went 3 and out in that third quarter, you could still get under 7.5 -135. I immediately played it. Why? Because the Giants up 21-7 are going to be as conservative as can be in the third quarter. They're going to run the ball. They're going to just try to get to the end of this game. So I take under 7.5 Giants right there. Didn't sweat at all, because by the time the Browns get the ball back, number one, they can't block. Number two, they can't score if you can't block. So even if they did, it was going to take them forever to get a touchdown. I thought that third quarter, along with the Miami third quarter under, were two juicy, juicy third quarters.
I also just think that the best, like we just give a macro thing on in-game, the Kansas City double dip, right? Double dips are still the way to go, I think. Those are still, if you're to ask what is generally the most advantageous moment to bet something in an NFL game. Remember, Kansas City had a double dip coming and they were losing, and the money line was very affordable at that point. And by the way, as I recall it, Kansas
City. They adjust
City
now, Gilly.
What's that? They do adjust better.
They adjust a lot more. They really do.
And what ended up happening was that Kansas City didn't actually execute the first half, but then your boy Curtis Cousins threw a pick, right? And so sure Kansas did. City did yes. execute. They scored. Yeah. But anyway, I think that's generally speaking, even though they are better at it than they used to be, for sure. All right, Drew, you are the guest, sir. Thank you, by the way.
What about Thursday night? Thursday night.
Oh, Thursday night. Thank you, Todd. For God's sakes, it's your podcast. Thank you,
guys. Oh, bummer. I was going to go right into some Atlanta bashing.
I actually do have a best bet on the Thursday night game. Does anybody else?
I do, too.
Nope.
Let Willie go first because he hasn't talked and he's done with his ice cream and sprinkles.
I am going to lay it here. What do we have for the line, Gilly? Five and a half.
It is no.
I got 5 and 45.
No. Oh, yeah. I got 5.5 now. 5.5 and 45.
Okay. Yeah, this is interesting. It's gone from 4 to 6 back down to, like, I saw 4 this morning, where it's all within the same, you know, like 24 hours, which is unusual. A lot of dead numbers between 4 and 6, but I'll lay it with Dallas. I just think this is a spot where, hey, they're good as a favorite. They're good as a bully. They desperately need the game. I do think there's a little bit of a reaction, an overreaction to, hey, the Giants looked good last week. Dallas hasn't played well in a couple weeks. Dallas has absolutely owned the Giants, and the Giants are missing. I don't know if they're missing or they're just hurt. I haven't gotten the official, like, you know, we're not going to see the actives and inactives for a while. I don't know if we have clarity, but the Giants secondary is all beat up. I think this is a good spot for Dallas to get back on track. So I'm okay Dallas winning this game by a touchdown plus. And once they get a lead, this is the kind of team, Daniel Jones, where they can, you know, gamble on defense, make, you know, be aggressive, force some turnovers, force some mistakes. So I'm okay laying it here with the Dallas Cowboys.
I went under. I don't hate yours at all, Will. I went under on this. By the way, did you see this stat? This is the first time ever that the Dallas Cowboys have played a road game on 3 days rest, and that every other team in the league has done it at least six times. Something like that.
Because they get a Thanksgiving home game.
A good one.
Because they get a Thanksgiving home game. That's exactly right. Detroit had the same thing, but then Detroit had this exact same situation last year, I believe, where they played on the road in week four. I'm going to take the under. There's the only thing that worked for me last week was the Thursday night under. I'm doing it again this week. This one is, you know, Dak has these weird home road splits. I don't know how much to make of that, but he did suck EPA per dropback last year. He was like 30th in the league on the road. Not so good this year as compared to home. But the big thing with the Cowboys is Tyron Smith. The loss of him is like a huge deal. He allowed through nine games last year. It took him nine games to allow eight pressures. Tyler Guyton, the kid that's replaced him, has already allowed that many in three games, and he's got to deal with Brian Burns today. Brian Burns has generated 15 pressures. That's ninth in the NFL. CeeDee Lamb still has the ankle injury. Dallas, in terms of their EPA per rush attempt allowed, is really bad. I'm not sure if New York can exploit it the same way that the Saints and Ravens can, but they could exploit it perhaps enough to churn the clock. Dallas also, and this is the biggest thing also, that the sort of the eyes don't catch. I love talking about red zone offense and red zone defense. Last year, Cleveland, really good defense, worst red zone touchdown percentage in the entire league. They gave up touchdowns at 71% rate. Those things are generally regression candidates. And the Cowboys through 3 weeks have given up 90% touchdowns on opponents in the red zone. That should probably regress quickly tonight, I'm guessing. So, and by the way, the general scoring environment in the NFL through 3 weeks is down 2.7 points. So it's short, you know, it's a short turnaround for both of these teams. The Giants offense is not anything to be scared of to begin with. The Dallas defense has been suspect. So I think the combination of all those things, the regression in the red zone, 45.5 is not that low of a number. So I'm going to go under.
I see 45. Is it really 45? I think it's 45.
You're right. It's 45. You're correct. It was 45.5 this morning. 45.
I love this pick, by the way. Gilly, I love this pick. This is a great – the Giants can't score.
Yeah, but a Willie scenario, that's a game script that scares me, though, right? Like, if Dallas does get into this lead mode where they're just like, and then Micah goes crazy. 10.
You lose 37-10. That's how you lose.
Exactly. You're right. That's my number one today. Drew, you're on.
Okay, I'll go to the aforementioned Falcons-Saints game. I'll take the Saints plus the points, +2.5 work for everybody. Yes. I actually bet the money line here. I think the Saints are the better team. And I don't think I just want to kind of key on, like, there's a lot of people who have made a lot of noise this week about the Saints center being out and haven't acknowledged the fact that the Falcons center is out and that the Falcons are doing an awful lot of, shotgun snapping to Kirk Cousins right now, and good luck kind of on a in a high pressure week figuring that out entirely smoothly. But even more than that, like, the backup center for the Saints is fine. He was a serviceable player for the Bears last couple of years, and I have no issues with him stepping in and being fine. The backup center for the Falcons is a man named Ryan Nuzil. And I think that just in general, if you want to have questions about both of these offenses, fine. If you want to have questions about the Falcons defense, you are correct. But I think there is a standout unit in this game, and it is the Saints defense. I'm expecting that DeMario Douglas will play. I'm expecting that Alante Taylor will be over his illness. And I think the matchup of the coverage unit in particular against this kind of relatively meh group of skill position players for the Falcons is a solid positive matchup for Saints defense. I think that just in general, you can absolutely prey on this Falcons defense if you're Clint Kubiak. I like what he's doing so far this season with the Saints offense. Huge step forward from what we saw last year under Carmichael. And I think the Saints get a clean win and seize control of the NFC South, at least for the time being, until we see some Saints-Tampa Bay matchups later this season. So the fact that you're getting your better coach, in my opinion, with Dennis Allen, I know that he's not especially popular, but I am not a Raheem Morris guy. And you're getting the healthier quarterback is a little bit of icing on the cake there. So Saints plus the 2.5 for me.
Saints plus the 2.5, one of eight early games this week. So this last week it was seven in the early window, then five in the late window with the two Monday nights. This week we have eight in the early window, four in the afternoon with the two Monday nights. Do we prefer, I know we don't prefer like the 10-3 or the 9-3 that we've seen. Those are awful. Do we like 7-5 the best? I think we do, right?
7-5 is the best.
Absolutely the best. Yeah. 8-4.
I honestly, I just want better Sunday football.
Oh, you know what, Drew? I'm so glad you said this. Do you remember, Drew, this was
last You put year. Them in whatever order you want. Just give us better quality football.
So last year, I remember, Drew, you and I saw this the same too. I remember last year was the first time that I ever said, wow. And this was right around weeks 3 and 4 of last year too, where it was like, man, these last 2 weeks of Sunday football have felt like work. And yeah. I never feel that way on Sunday football. But this last week, it came back to me again. Is that because of the three preseason games? Is that because they shortened preseason?
It's more of probably just the young, you know, the age and the experience of the quarterbacks and the aggressive turnover of offensive coordinators. Like, I think that it's taking longer for teams to kind of find any footing on offense. And the old saying of defense is ahead of offense has probably never been more true, especially early in the season. Now, whether this carries through is more of a quarterbacks just weren't ready to play. And, you know, we'll see with the likes of the Caleb Williams and the Will Levises of the world, if they just continue to stub their toe. But at least we have Daniels for now.
I think, we got Jaden Daniels, that's for sure. I think it's all of that. And it's also like, you know, hey, Bryce Young, you had a terrible rookie year. We play you one set of downs, like one drive. It was one drive in the preseason. Yep, we've seen enough. You're good. Come on. Really? So there's that too. Will or Todd? Who goes first here?
My turn.
Will already had a pick. Todd, you.
Yes. Yeah. By the way, I just want to talk about with me and Will, you're always looking during the game at the pass attempts by the quarterback who's going to be trailing. And we should probably talk a little bit about that because, you know, Willie who jumped on it right away with Trevor Lawrence early on. You could see that the Jaguars defense did not decide to show up. I believe they were still on the bus halfway through the second quarter. And Willie immediately said, hey, Lawrence is going to be slinging it the whole time. And Willie, your thoughts on that is just that I think we should also talk about what's the baseline. At halftime, it seems they want 20 and a half more passes. So if a guy has 15 attempts, they're going to put it at like 35 and a half, 36 and a half for the second half. And then maybe you should talk about what we need to think we can happen. Like, can we move the sticks and stuff like that?
Yeah, I haven't done the math in terms of like, this is the pregame number, this is how many he has now, and this is how many they're projecting, but I've done it. We've done these enough where I can just sort of eye it out, and you and I will text back and forth and be like, oh, it just looks too high. It's one of those things where if he needs 25 attempts in the second half, that's a lot of attempts. But I would phrase it this way. It's rarely wrong when you get the sense of like a Monday night where it's 7-0, team is losing, the other team's driving, it's clearly about to be 14-0. You're like, all right, it's going to be one of these games. They're going to have to play catch up. It was Dak a couple weeks ago against the Saints, where you can tell pretty early, all right, this team's in a hole. You want a pretty good quarterback because you don't want a Will Levis or a Brissett where they're going to go 3 and out. You want enough where you can kind of get those garbage yards, garbage completions, leads to more attempts. And you always have to worry about the guy gets pulled and you get burned. We got burned, I think, with Stafford a couple weeks ago where you got taken out. And if you played Lawrence late, you got burned because he was out for the last 7 minutes. But just generally, a decent quarterback, their team falls behind and they're going to have to throw. Catching that early, usually it's in like the mid to high 30s. Those are usually pretty good overs in terms of the quarterback attempts.
And I think you want to be ahead of 20 and a half more going to the second half. Of course, it also matters who gets the ball first in the third quarter. If the Jaguars get the ball first in the third quarter.
Like, one of those games we tried to bet, I think it was the Burrow one, where it's like, oh, he can't. Yeah, he's going to get the attempts, but his defense, like, he can't get the ball back, which obviously that's a factor. So there's a lot of moving parts in it. But just in general, if you see a decent team, a decent quarterback fall behind, you know, pretty early, 14, 17, it's – you know, you don't want to be in a situation where it's like 10-0, then it's you can stick to like that run heavy script or one score gets them back in the game or our neutral script. But if a good team falls behind pretty big, pretty early, those attempts add up quickly.
We also got burned on Etienne. the same game at the end. We had under 41 and a half rushing yards. He had 9 at the half, and I was already counting the money because I thought he's not even going to get many carries in the second half, down 34-3. Of course, we got burned because the Jaguars were doing that old shtick where they're like, well, on first down, we better hand it off, otherwise they're going to kill our quarterback. And Etienne runs for like 1,000 yards.
The one that put it over the top, they pulled Lawrence. They figured, all right, they're calling off the dogs. They put in Mac Jones. First plays a little give up draw to Etienne. Of course, it can't get stopped. Of course, he has to go for 15 and beat us. But hey, it's one of those things. Good bets lose.
I still thought it was a good bet. I thought it was a good bet by both of us. Anyway, okay. First pick for me. And by the way, guys, there's definitely things that you can get on these props in game if you're allowed to bet props in game that are very advantageous. So that's why I bring it up, and me and Willie are always texting about it. Okay, anyways, my number one pick, I'm gonna go with your Detroit Lions. Okay.
That's my number two too. Yep.
I like Detroit minus, I believe, 3.5, correct? Is that what everyone's saying? Detroit minus 3.5. Yeah. Detroit minus 3.5. I think Dan Campbell got in the old locker room and he said, hey, look, we're going to run the football. You're going to line up and see if you can beat us. But I don't think you can because our big boys are bigger than your big boys. We're going to just push you around. And I think that's the identity of this Detroit Lions football team. That coach wants to just be a bully. He wants to line up and push your guys around. Look, we're going to smash you in the mouth. And if you can stop us, you can stop us. If you can't, you can't. And Detroit is going to hopefully do it. Now, look, Seattle, what has Seattle done this year? The first game of the year, who did Seattle play the first game of the year? I believe it was Bo Nix at home with their good defensive coach. Easy winner. Then they go to New England and they win in overtime. Again, you wouldn't exactly call it world beater competition. Then they get Skylar Thompson. Now, even I knew Skylar Thompson wasn't ready for the National Football League. Everyone was like, oh, well, he played the playoff game. They only lost 34-31. Yeah, he was 18 for 45. It had nothing to do with him. He was not ready for prime time, Skylar Thompson. And again, the Seahawks roll. Now, those three teams are not NFL caliber teams. Now the Detroit Lions, you're going on the road and you only have to lay 3.5 against a Seahawks team, which may not be as good as this 3-0 warrants. I have to take the Detroit Lions because we're going to punch him in the mouth.
Well, you and I match on this, Todd. And Drew, forgive me if I'm stealing some of your thunder on this, because Drew was on Numbers Game earlier this week and we talked about it. Is exactly what you said about Seattle, right, Todd? That there's nothing they've done. And I have Mike McDonald Coach of the Year tickets. Drew, I know you do too. So only want the best for the Seahawks. My thing this offseason was they're going to warm to Mike McDonald's defense over time. They've warmed to it very quickly, by the way. But they haven't really – the 3-0, their 3-0 seems a bit fugazi, right? Seems a bit, for all the reasons you state. The flip side of that is Detroit is kind of feels like they're playing possum also, right? Not playing possum on purpose, but they have not been as good as they should have been. They completely out-yarded – if you will, outgained Tampa Bay. They doubled them up, if not more, in their loss to Tampa Bay. And then last week, they were kind of listless against the Cardinals, but had their chances as well to blow that open, but they just never really would. So I think both of those things in, right? Detroit sort of playing below level, Seattle perhaps outperforming, and you get this 3.5-point line. I'm with you on Detroit.
Willie's turn.
I don't get a
total here for I'm gonna just stick with it. I don't like it this week as much as in past weeks, but I said I'd stick with Steelers unders until they beat me, and they haven't beat me yet, so I'm gonna go back to it. What do we have, 40 here?
40.
Yep. My app's not loading. 40's good.
40 is correct. Yes.
Same handicap. Tomlin just wants to keep these games close and conservative and kick and punt and, you know, kick his field goals and punt 4th and 2 or 4th and 3 from midfield. And look, I don't know. Richardson's such a boomer bust player. I don't know how he factors into this handicap because he's just so daring with the ball, but so inaccurate. That was an awful game he and Caleb Williams played last week. That was just a painful watch. Speaking to Drew and Gilly, your point about these games being tough to watch, that led the charge. That was a tough one, but I'm just going to stick with it. I mean, these Steeler games are 20-10, 20-12, 13-6. I look for another type of these games. It's going to burn me one of these weeks, but I'll stick with it till it beats me. So Steelers, Colts, under 40.
I got a question for Drew Dinsick and Yinz. Oh, look, there's still our defense, right? It's a ferocious defense. We've got the most ferocious. Now, the question I have for Yinz is, the Rivers Casino's directly next to Akershire Stadium's charging $100 for self-parking. Is that more vicious or less vicious than the Stiller D? I think the Stiller D is very vicious, but it's not at the level of $100 for self-park. Drew, your thoughts?
I'm going to say the parking is more vicious. I like the Steelers. I like the defense, but they, you know, in much in the same way that you can kind of poke holes in the Seahawks about strength of opponent to this point in the season. Like the Steelers defensive, they've gotten to pick on the statue of Kirk Cousins, Bo Nix, you know, in his second start. And then last week, kind of the statue of Herbert for a half, and then, you know, the mess of Heineke. So yeah,
By the way, Herbert was moving it on. To be fair, Herbert was moving it on them at halftime.
Yeah. I had
one. And their tackles got hurt too. I mean, that's just
Everybody
that's the typical hurt, Tomlin lock of the offensive line gets hurt and Herbert.
Yeah, the boot is quite strong this year. Yeah,
sure is.
Now, Willie, would you say 89 cents for the sprinkles at the Fever game is worse than the $80 down at the Rivers parking? It's a very close call.
It is. It's not that there was 89, and we went to the Drew. I went to the Fever Sun game last night, and they were giving me a hard time about paying money. Because the tickets were too expensive, you guys thought, for the game, which I didn't have a problem with the tickets. But then we went to Ben and Jerry's, got some ice cream, and there was like maybe, I don't know, a dozen sprinkles for like a dollar sprinkles, and that was a point of contention to catch you up here.
Thanks for that recap. Thanks for getting the audience up on that. Todd, you knew Todd, you'd have a very likewise audience in Todd. He hates that kind of shit. By the way, what was the question?
I expect at least 24 sprinkles if you're going to make me pay a dollar. Yeah.
More or less? What was the word that you used there? More or less?
More or less. Because the question is, the defense, we got TJ Watt. TJ Watt's worth $50 of parking right there. Then Yin's got to think, okay, now I get another $50 with the rest of the Stiller team. Okay, so it's real close. It's probably like $89.99 for the Stiller's D, and the parking's $100. So Yin's got to go with the parking a little more vicious. I agree with Drew.
What's your number two, Toddy? Go ahead, Will. I'm
my
sorry.
Number two.
I just had a very quick commentary that Todd has very little sense. You could tell he's a single guy of what things cost. Like, things cost money. Like, how could you spend that much on the Fever tickets? How could you spend that much? Have you been out of your house, Todd? Everything costs a lot of money. There's a disconnect.
Well, it's also that he also lives in 1985. So he applies the same. He's like, I didn't pay for parking at Three Rivers in 1985. Why should I pay parking now? I'm like, dude, it's like 1985. So he's got that going for him.
There are certain things on principle that I will not pay for. Okay. I'm so sorry. Okay. Now it's my turn for my number two pick, and then we go two for Drew. I am going to go. I have a lot of questions about what I should do here with the second one, but I'm just going to go back to the well. Willie says, always bet the Steelers under. I say, always bet the Commanders over. The line is 50, I believe, with the Commanders. Am I correct? Is it 50?
It is 50. Yep.
I think 50. We all heard about how the Commanders haven't punted in 2 weeks. They got 7 field goals against the Giants to go for 21-18 winner. And then they go into Cincinnati, a horrible defense again, and they don't even punt there either. But by the way, they also didn't make the other team punt. So they are a gorgeous over team, this Washington team, because Mr. Daniels at quarterback is the steal of the draft. I loved him at LSU. The guy runs. Now, is he going to stay alive? I don't know, because he takes some shots that are just, you're like, is he still alive? He looks like he's 145 pounds compared to these guys. I don't know if he's going to stay alive. But however, if he stands upright, he is going to score some points for the Washington Commanders. The Washington Commanders' defense is horrendous. It is so bad, the defense. So they're going to give up 30 points a game. So now you're going to Arizona. Kyler Murray is going to be running around like crazy. Daniels is going to be running around like crazy. It's not like Arizona's defense is any good. How are we not going to go over 50? And it's It's disguised because of the fact the Giants game only went 21-18, and that was a game that could have had a 30-point score if they wouldn't have had 7 field goals, right? And the first game of the week, the Commanders lost 37-20 against Tampa Bay. So I think the Commanders are going to be an over machine this year. No defense and very good offense spells over, and it's not like Arizona isn't an over team too. Give me over 50 in the Washington Commanders.
It all checks out, man. I'm so excited about Jaden Daniels as everybody who's a Skins fan is, but everybody has the same RG3, you know, what's it called?
PTSD.
PTSD. Thank you. PTSD. We just please stay healthy. Please, for God's sakes. My favorite part of that was, well, two things. One, he finally found out who Terry McLaurin was, which was awesome because Terry McLaurin is just incomparable. Have you heard me say that before? And the other thing was, after the game, did you see the interview where Daniels had sort of the presence of mind to say, because he threw the first touchdown to Trent Scott, the tackle, and he goes, that's going to be a great answer to a trivia question years from now, which I thought was like, oh, I like that.
I like that.
Light bulb. He's like, aha, I'm going to be awesome. Because I was saying the first couple of weeks, I'm like, he's so comfortable that I'm a little worried he's too comfortable. And now you can't even say that anymore. He just looks like the game is, he is so, the stage is not too big for him at all. It's been fantastic. And I loved him at ASU too, Todd, even before LSU. Love those late night games.
That's right.
He
was
ASU. Where he would throw,
you know,
to
Herm IU. Herm Edwards tried to defend against him. Herm Edwards and his 1970s NFL bullcrap was trying to dampen Jaden Daniels with the 3rd and 5 runs to the fullback. So he was even better, even though his coach was holding him back.
Yeah. That Terry McLaurin touchdown was top 5 all of plays this season for sure. And if you're a Commanders fan, be sure to check out the kind of recap of the block that set that up by Jeremy McNichols, who was the running back spelling the injured Austin Eckler. He takes Jermaine Pratt and just freaking forklifts him, dumps him. It is quite awesome. And you can tell has no idea like what the pressure, you know, what his responsibilities. He's like, they're like, who do I have? Like he's like, you know, asking Daniels and as they're lined up, it was quite cool. So great play. And love the Commanders. I just love it. I hope they keep giving us a show, cause they're very fun to watch.
Was it Next Gen Stats? I believe it was, that said it was just over a 10% success probability on that touchdown.
Killer.
Because he was about to get blasted, and then McLaurin, you just know, it's like McLaurin was at the 20-yard line when he released the ball.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Awesome.
Knee in.
Okay. Second play for me, I'm going to go back to the NFC South, and I'm going to take another dog. This time we're going with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers against the injured Philadelphia Eagles. I can get I don't know, 2, 1.5, 2.5. Doesn't matter to me. I played the money line here for the Bucks. For record keeping purposes,
what do you guys,
you want
say
to go two?
I think two is correct.
Okay. Yeah. So I'll do Bucks plus 2. The handicap is pretty straightforward. I'm expecting the Bucks offensive line to be at full strength here. That matters. I think the ability to protect Baker Mayfield brings out the best in him in terms of quarterback play. And I think the weapons of Godwin and Evans are going to be an extremely difficult test for this still figuring it out secondary from Philadelphia. So I do think the Buccaneers are going to be able to control game state, put a little bit of scoreboard pressure on Philadelphia here. And then the Philadelphia offense, like, it hasn't really been broadly covered, but like, yeah, making Philly a favorite on the road of this magnitude, if they were fully healthy, I'm not going to take exception to that. But I do not think there is a very strong likelihood at all that Devontae Smith plays. I think it is also unlikely that AJ Brown is ready to go. And I think it is unlikely that Lane Johnson is ready to go. If you are keeping track, those are probably 3 of the 4 most important Philadelphia Eagles on the offensive side of the ball. Maybe they're 3 of their most 4 important players, period. And Jalen Hurts had the narrative beating all offseason long that he did not have the answers in their, you know, in their free fall last year. He did not have the answers when he was blitzed. And that was no more apparent than when he went against Todd Bowles in the playoffs. And Todd Bowles is blitzing at an absolutely absurd rate still. You combine that with now he's going to have to figure out protections in the absence of, you know, the key blocker in Lane Johnson. And he's going to have to figure out who he's going to with hot reads in the absence of his two most important receivers. This to me looks like a huge, huge problem for Philadelphia. I think the wrong team is favored, and I will take the home team Buccaneers. I bet them outright, but I like plus two as well.
And I think, and I don't have them at my disposal right here, but Lane Johnson, to your point, I think there are stats on him going way back because he's oft injured, and there are really stark statistics when Lane Johnson plays, when Lane Johnson doesn't play, how absolutely diametrically opposed those are. Like, Philly without him is terrible, and Philly with him is great.
And also, like, you guys brought it up in the boneheaded coaching convo. Nick Sirianni, I don't know what in the world he's doing. Like, it doesn't feel, you know, I know they have a very good analytics department in Philadelphia. Those guys must be pulling their hair out. And when, because he's just kind of just doing like magic eight ball, going for it, kicking, you know, the play calls have been terrible. Like, I really do not understand what is going on right now with kind of the decision making. And he's making decisions, you know, he's acting like a beleaguered coach, which I think he is. And so
he's like a 3 a.m. blackjack player trying to get it all back.
Yeah, there you go.
One crazy.
That's exactly. Great comp. Great comp. And my vote of no confidence is in on Sirianni.
All right. What's your final one, Drew?
I'm going to stick with the dogs. I'm going to take the bait. I'm the mouse that's taking the cheese this week. Buffalo Bills for me on Sunday Night Football. This team is a truck.
What line are you giving him in this one?
I honestly am. I know I'll take two. Looks two. Like reasonable two. To me. There's two and a halfs out there, but two is fine.
You don't get to pick, Drew. We get to decide what you get.
Okay. I bet the money line. I took the money line on all three of these dogs for Gil, kind of
what,
full
what is
transparency.
The correct line? Drew two, doesn't realize two. He doesn't get to be his own, SEC here. He thinks he's like going to trade stocks and be the SEC. No, it doesn't work like that. Two. Okay, so he's getting the Bills plus two. Okay.
Yes,
sorry,
yes,
Drew.
Yes.
In the preseason, when this line was also expected to be in this range, I would not have taken exception. I would have said, yes, this Ravens team is unbelievable at stopping the run, and the Bills seem to want to be a running team without really any proof of concept that they have weapons in the passing game who can do anything. And this is a nice matchup for a Ravens defense to keep the game in check. And Bills defense missing Milano, questions about the secondary, are they going to have a pass rush? All of this, you know, really spells trouble, I think, for the Bills in this spot. So I'm fine with the Ravens being favored. Now, I think with the information we have through 3 weeks, you have to acknowledge the fact that Josh Allen is playing the best quarterback in the NFL by margin. I think you have to acknowledge the fact that the Buffalo Bills offensive line is elite. And I think you have to acknowledge the fact that the Ravens defense is missing a one Mike McDonald in terms of kind of being as conceptually sound, particularly in pass defense, as they were last year. They're still amazing at stopping the run, but this is a team that can be beat through the air. And I do think that the Buffalo Bills offense can continue their success. And it all kind of comes down to Josh Allen continuing to avoid making the key mistake, in my opinion. Anyone who is betting the Ravens is basically expecting that this is the game. There's going to be some sort of regression for Allen and turnovers. And I got to tell you, I've seen enough. Like, he looks like he is a much more mature player than the guy that was out there the last handful of years. He still has the elite skill set that it makes him a top two player in the NFL, period. And I think riding him while he's on this heater is the obvious correct decision. And then when you flip the coin and you tell me, how are the Ravens going to, you know, deal with a negative game state if it manifests, this pass catching unit for the Ravens stinks. And they really have no one that can generate significant separation. And now they're going up against a secondary that has, absolute elite cover corner so far out of Christian Benford. If you haven't heard that name already, go look at some of the advanced stats about what he's doing in terms of preventing separation and his on ball, his ability to break up passes. He is playing at a CB1 Pro Bowl level to this point in the season, and really going back to the end of last season. So I don't know that that can be dismissed. And I think Douglas is equally good and at shutting down wide receiver two or the tight end, and safeties are playing well. Pass rush is excellent against a Baltimore O-line that has huge question marks for me. So I think Buffalo better in both trenches, better quarterback. The team that ought to be small favorite here. So give me plus two.
Todd, you're up.
My turn to pick. Yeah. Now, here was the thing. I was going to take the Ravens against Drew's Bills plus two. You know what? Screw Drew. Screw this Drew guy.
I don't mind going up against him. I'm the rat that took the cheese this week. I acknowledge
he comes in all relaxed, got the long hair. He's probably got like a harem of ladies just outside the camera shot and a tremendous calming background in the back. I mean, this guy just looks like he's living the life. We're going to have to go against him. That's all, Gilly. I'm going against him. Call me crazy. I'm going to take the Baltimore Ravens at minus two. Okay. Now, here's, by the way, I agree with everything that Drew said. The Bills have been playing out of their minds. Okay. The Bills are playing outstanding football. By the way, that Monday Night Football game, it wasn't even a game. After like 2 seconds, you could tell the game was over. And so, I mean, Buffalo has been unbelievable, and they crushed Miami. Now, the game before that against Arizona, they were a little suspect on the defensive side of the ball. But, you know, overall, the Bills really look good. However, it's the National Football League. I've been betting on these games for too long to know that when a team beats a team 31-10, like they did against Miami, then they come out the next week and beat Jacksonville 800-0, like they did. Can they cover the spread 3 weeks in a row like that against a team that's a very good team? Now, on top of that, Baltimore's giving points, right? So now everybody and their brother is going, wait, I get the Bills, the best team almost in football, and I get points? That to me sounds like trouble city in the National Football League. You got to go against Harbaugh. He's at home. They blew the game against the Raiders that they should have easily won by 1,000, right? Now you're asking Harbaugh to do a little Harbaugh potion. You know, Harbaugh in these big games, he cooks up some potions. I think he's going to cook up some defensive potions for this Bills squad, somehow slow them down. And it's not like the Ravens aren't good. They just went into Big D and just crushed Dallas, absolutely crushed their hopes, all their dreams down, all their hopes down, right? So the Ravens, to me, that was a little rounders for you. That was a little, all your hopes down, all your dreams down, your fate sitting over there. Anyways, the point is, I just like the spot. I love the spot here. Baltimore, if they're gonna win one of these big games, this is the one. You got to think the Bills come in a little fat and happy. I like Baltimore minus two. If we get the turnovers, we're going to win the game. Baltimore minus two.
I'll just jump in, Will, because I know you have one more. But I hate to have two that are exactly like Todd. I feel like the fledgling radio station that's trying to get better ratings against the Big Goliath. So I just play the same songs. But for me, the number three pick was between the Broncos catching 7.5 and taking Baltimore minus two. And ultimately, I can't the Bo Nix versus that Jets defense scenario where they just get blasted. I couldn't do it, even though I think 7.5 is probably too high. It's Baltimore. And for me, it's just about not shedding my priors from before the season. Right. I just think Baltimore is the better football team. And as good as Buffalo has been, and I agree with everything Drew is saying, there's nothing you said that was wrong. They have to be able to come up with something that stops these Josh Allen. Oh, you know what? I'm just going to run the ball up the middle now on a designed run. Like there has to be some kind of countermeasure to this. And I do think that Baltimore will be able to come up with it. I agree with the Mike McDonald stuff. They're clearly not as good on defense without him bringing blitzes from every which way where the quarterback can't figure it out. And Josh Allen, every which way you slice it up, total QBR, passer rating, EPA per play. He's number one with a bullet in all of this. And yet, I think the Baltimore Ravens are a good football team and that they will not fall to 1-3 and they will win this football game. I'm taking Baltimore minus two as well. Willie.
Okay. I guess, gotta tell you guys, if the Buffalo Bills truck continues, they got three games in a row on the road. Ravens, Texans, Jets. This is a nightmare stretch. I would say that one of the aspects of overperforming that you can usually capitalize, like you guys are kind of making out, is when the market overreacts, and it's not yet, right? Like a win on Sunday Night Football, a third straight cover, that's going to cause a flip to where the Texans game, maybe they're favored on the road against the Texans. Like I think you know, don't lose hope and don't be on the wrong side of this next week if the Bills take care of business, because yeah, there's, you know, there's opportunities coming up, I think, to fade these guys, but I just am not seeing it with this particular Ravens team. So we'll see.
All right. We have, schmack talking possibilities come Sunday, Monday. All right, Will, what's the last one? Because my juice is running out.
Okay. Do we have a, can I get a 43 in Tampa, Philly, since you're running out of time? You can just say yes.
43 in Tampa, Philly.
That looks like it's widely available.
Yep.
43. I'm like you guys, I actually respect Drew's handicapping acumen, so I'm going to kind of borrow from what he's thinking. I don't like this Philly offense in this spot. Tampa plays at a very slow pace. They're at the bottom of the league in terms of plays per game. Bowles, as Drew mentioned, did a great job against Hurts last year in the playoff game, held him to 9 points. And if you're Philly with no Brown, no Smith, maybe Becton's wearing a thing on his finger with a dislocated finger, Lane Johnson, all of those reasons, to me, this is just more of a grinded out game. So I'm going to play another under here. I'll go under 43. And I don't know how you guys feel. I don't have a great feel for these teams in terms of the size of like who to back, who not to. I just have a hard time getting a sense for any of these teams. So hopefully I'll have a better luck here with an under.
Well, I was saying last week, I was like, I never do totals on the Megapod, right? Never. And the fact that I'm doing one a week now all of a sudden says exactly what you're saying, Will. Like, I just, none of these sides, like, there's not enough of these that I love to play, for sure. Teaser of the week, Drew, 2-leg, 6-point teaser. Your favorite.
Yeah, give me two teams at home in the Wong zone. I'm going to tease the Jets from 7.5 to 1.5, and I'm going to tease the Colts from 1.5 to 7.5. I think the Colts Steelers game is going to be competitive. I think the Steelers just in general still have a lot to prove in terms of being able to run an offense, particularly with both running backs being injured now. I think that's a game that's decided by a field goal either way. So happy to put me on the other side of 7. And the Jets, it's kind of weird. The Broncos defense is being a little bit celebrated for their early season performance, but I think the absence of Alex Singleton is going to be significantly felt here. He was their only good linebacker, and I think the Jets might not punt in this contest. So give me Jets, Colts as home teams, low totals, Wong zone.
Speaking of EPA per play, Anthony Richardson, 32nd below Bryce Young. Ouch.
Dude, this is a huge Wong week, by the way.
It is a huge Wonger. You are right about that.
There's like Will? 10. There's like 6 choices here.
Yeah, I'll keep it brief. I'll go Bucks and I'll go Colts for a lot of the reasons Drew mentioned. I think those should be closer games. Steelers don't blow anybody out, so Bucks, Colts. By the way, your Tigers have cut it to 3-2 for anyone looking for baseball updates from hours ago or days ago by the time they listen to this.
I have the Tigers to make at plus 450. I have the Braves to lose at, you have the Braves to lose at 15-1. I have it at plus 750. Todd, you're on the Braves to miss the playoffs also?
Yes.
All right. What's your teaser, Toddy?
My teaser is going to be the Jets minus 1.5. We've talked enough about why we don't think the Jets are losing this game. I believe, you know, come on, Bo Nix, seriously. Jets minus, although he did have one of the greatest scrambles in NFL history last week. Did you see that one scramble where he got out of like 4 guys sacking him?
He didn't look bad last week. Jets, he looked decent.
Yeah, he looked okay. But I don't think he's not going to beat the Jets. Jets minus the 1.5 and give me the Bucks plus the 8. I believe the Bucks can keep it close here with all the the only thing I want to say about the Eagles is it sure seems to me when I watch the game that Jalen Hurts goes back to pass and pats the ball for about 100 years, a lot of the plays, and then he just runs out to the right and either throws it away or tries to run for it. I don't think that downfield passing game looks very good for the Eagles, and now you've got all those wide receivers out. Give me the Bucks plus the 8.
I'm taking the Jets, like so many here, and I am going to take the Saints, wonging them through the 3 and the 7. Because I don't see the Falcons blowing them out in any scenario. So Saints, Jets for Young Gil. Final two questions of each and every Megapod. First one, which of the big favorites is the most likely to lose outright? Not that many choices this week. It's the Jets, 7.5-point favorites at home against the Broncos. The Niners, 10.5-point favorites at home against the Patriots. Chiefs, 7-point favorites on the road against the Chargé. We will limit it to those three. Which, Drew, if one of them loses, who's it going to be?
Oh, man. I just wanted to note that it's fascinating that the big money today came in on the Jaguars, moved that off of 6.5 down, mm-hmm. down to 5.5. Cross six is a big move. I'm going to say that the Chiefs are the most likely to lose, and this seems insane to say out loud. But I think it's gone a little bit missed in the three games that they've, you know, the three wins so far, that every single high leverage opportunity for this offense to put away games, they have failed. Every single one. They're getting out to leads. They're playing with leads, but they're not doing sort of the classic, you know, Andy Reid, Mahomes, put the game away with, you know, the drive that sucks 5 minutes off the clock at the end of the fourth quarter to, you know, make it a clean win. They've been a little lucky. And I think it sounds like Herbert's going to try to push through this. I know that everybody else is hurt here for the Chargers, but yeah, I think this is going to be a competitive game, and I think of the big favorites, I would be the most concerned about the Chiefs, just based on a little bit of inflation in terms of how people are rating them.
Yeah, because the Niners, as banged up as they are they really going to lose to the Patriots? And are the Jets, with that defense, really going to lose to Bo Nix? Is it Chiefs for everybody? Will?
I'm going to say Chiefs.
I'll say Chiefs.
I would actually – I'd be surprised if Herbert played. I haven't read the latest, but they have a bye next week. They're beat up on the offensive line. Does the market think Herbert's playing? Because this line, even with hobbled
– Herbert has called his own number so many times to this point in his own career. That it's crazy. Yeah. Like how you know this sort of stuff, the cloak and dagger stuff, where it's like literally like, no, he can't play. He won't play. He's not going. Oh, surprise. I'm going, you know, like he is, I don't know that it's smart. it's never rational. But it sounds like he's going to push himself out there.
Wow. Did I create a,
by the way, can I say one quick?
Yes, you did.
You did. You caused it. But we're almost done. The Chiefs. I just want to say one thing about the Chiefs. I think that Andy Reid has made the Chiefs running game dinkerball passes to Rice. What I mean by dinkerball passes is like Mahomes goes back two steps, flips it to Rice, and it's like either behind the line of scrimmage or just past the line of scrimmage, and Rice goes for like 6 or 7 yards. Instead of just handing the ball to whoever they have back there, Steele or whoever now is running the ball.
Pacheco.
Yeah, they missed Pacheco. My point is, if you see that early in the game where Rice is getting targeted almost every play, play Rice over catches, because I don't think they can make the number high enough. If you see, what'd you say?
He's the whole offense. I feel like he's the whole offense. Like Travis Kelce looks like he lost a step and a half over the offseason.
He's had dating issues. And that's the thing. But I just think, like I said to you at halftime, Rice, I believe, had like 6 or 7 catches at halftime, and they made it like 10.5, and it still wasn't high enough because they just, every time they need 4 or 5 yards, they just flip it to Rice, you know. But anyways, I think Chiefs to lose just because it's Harbaugh. Maybe Harbaugh will cook something up.
All right, final question, Drew. We live in a bizarre world. You pick a side or you bet a side in every single game, but you get one free pass. What game do you want no part of?
The easiest question of the day, Gil. It's the Browns-Raiders.
Browns-Raiders. That's a good one. Need you even explain that? Yeah.
I just, how do you rate either of these teams right now?
Yeah. Do we know who the starting a quarterback for the Raiders? Does it matter?
Yeah, I'm guessing it's going to be Gardner Minshew. Probably doesn't matter. Everybody on the Browns is hurt. Your two most important players in this game are Garrett and Crosby. They're both missing time. They both, you know, I know, no read on either, if either guy goes, if they're effective. Deshaun Watson might be the worst quarterback playing right now. Now that Bryce Young's out of the mix. You could come from the future and tell me that anything happened in this game, and I'm just going to shrug and say, yeah, okay, sure. 37-3 Browns. All right. 25-2 Raiders won. Oh wow, that's a weird score. Yeah, I would believe anything.
17-16
by the way, that, That comment about Watson being the worst now that Bryce Young is out, that's pretty strong. That's pretty strong take.
How about Lawrence?
I would take Lawrence over Watson in a heartbeat right now. In a heartbeat. Yeah.
The thing is, there's nobody blocking. Drew, the other thing is he doesn't get any blocking. If you watch that Giants game carefully, he doesn't even get a minute.
It looks like whatever happened to his shoulder is still impacting his ability to make downfield passes. He only has like four throws past 10 yards in his arm any given week. He has to put his whole body into it, which means he needs to have a perfectly clean pocket to do it. And his mechanics, if you just watch what's going on with his feet as he's trying to hit his intermediate stuff, it's just an absolute shit show. Like he's just fundamentally broken, it looks like. And you're not winning with that guy.
It's very reminiscent of RG3 after the injuries. It's like the sort of like not spoken part about RG3. Like, yeah, he got hurt and his career got ruined, but his mechanics after he was out for a long time just went out the window.
And he hasn't gotten any massages. He hasn't had a massage in 3 years. Give the guy a break.
There were some funny tweets about Browns fans trying to connect Watson to all the Diddy stuff and saying he was at the parties to try to get.
Yes, please, feds, figure out a way to connect this to Diddy so we can get rid of him. Yeah. Oh, gallows humor, everybody. I'm with you. I'm going to take the Browns and the Raiders as well. I think that of all the games, I mean, there's a lot I could say, but that more than anything, I think would be the one I wouldn't want any part of. Will?
Saints Falcons. No, you know what? I'm not cutting in line to back anyone in this Titans Dolphins Monday night bonanza. I bet enough Will Levis to last a lifetime. It's a Tyler Huntley from Miami. No, thank you there.
It is a bonanza. The first of two on Monday night. Is that the first or is that the nightcap? That's the first, right?
Play him at like the same time, which pisses me off.
How much longer for the Titans before they say, okay, that's enough, Will Levis. We've seen.
I don't know why it's not now. You see what Dalton did for the Panthers. Just put like Rudolph was decent for Pittsburgh last year. Why not just go with Rudolph?
Ill-advised Billy Levis. Oof. Todd, what's yours? You want to know part of?
For me, it's the Bears and the Rams. I can't believe. Now, granted, the Bears defense is supposedly this. Oh, we're so good according to the statistics. You know, the Bears, we're great according to. You're giving 3 points. You have a very, very big mismatch at coach. I believe Sean McVay, I'll take him over the other coach. And you're telling me the Bears, a team that can't even block for their number one pick, who can't even throw when he's running around like a lunatic, and he's laying 3 points to the Rams with Stafford. But, of course, I don't want Stafford either because everybody's injured on their team. So, I don't want any part of that one.
That was the line I was the farthest off on guessing lines. I actually thought the Rams would be favored by a tick. And even if I was wrong about that, how the Bears are full 3-point favorites, I will not understand, despite all the Rams. Because the Bears are like, what are we doing with them? But I agree with you about the coaching, right? The coaching alone should not be a 3-point spread in terms of the Bears, I think. Boys, we've done all we can do because apparently I can't figure out how to charge my computer without creating havoc. So, apologize for that. Drew, thank you for the seismology update. If something does happen in Southern California, this will live in infamy.
Knock on wood, it doesn't.
Yeah. Drew, I hope you can put up with me, giving you the business there. It's all done in total jealousy. I am in complete jealousy of your situation, just so you know.
Situation. Good, I think he means your life, your situation.
Yes,
I'd much Drew rather seems have very Drew's jealous. He's not on these group chats with Wishnev and all of us.
It's a complete joy. A complete joy. Drew has
okay,
enough.
Fine. Both of you guys can be ejected. I'll eject both of you right now. You want to go? You're out of here.
Drew has enough group chats in his life. Believe me on different things as well. All right, boys. Thank you. Drew Dinsick again, Whale_Capper, Deep Dive Podcast with Jay Croucher, Andy Molitor, and NBC Sports Bet the Edge with Jay Croucher. How often do you do Deep Dive? How often do you do Bet the Edge for everybody?
Oh, Deep Dive is twice a week, Mondays and Wednesdays, and Bet the Edge we do daily. So you can check it out. It's updated so that Monday through Friday, it should be the first thing that hits your feed. As you get up and you start thinking about football betting.
No more Beautiful. Sunday deep dives than you guys used to do it Sunday night?
We used to do it Sunday night, but it's we're not actually betting any of the openers just because it's not financially viable. so we're waiting until Monday when we get a little bit better limits is kind of the new strategy this year.
And are you still doing half times of primetime games, Drew?
Half time for the primetimes. We'll be going live for Cowboys Giants tonight, and we'll be deciding between backing Cowboys second half or second half over, probably. We'll see.
It's a great thing. Me and Wish never were going to do it, but Todd's too busy. He's got a big schedule.
It's not that. I told you what it is. You don't have to be such a jerk about it. Oh, my God. This guy is unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
Unbelievable. Well, it's your podcast, Todd. I apologize. All right. Thank you for listening. We need to turn it around. I'm trying. Good luck with all your bets tonight.
Wait. You can't give me a little at T Wishnev on Twitter. And by the way, if guys want to be in my – oh, you did? Okay. Anyways, if you want to be in my WhatsApp in game, because my college football has been doing pretty good. My pros is not that bad either. But you can always send me a message. I can't get everybody in that fast because it takes time to type in everybody's information. But I'll add them as they come when I get time to sit down. But, you know, some people seem to like it.
All right. And Will Hill, he has the I wish I had wagered an additional amount of money on this sporting event, and now I have deep regrets about not having done so podcast, which I told him. I said, that's a stupid title. Just call it Should Have Bet More. And he was like, okay. How often do you do that, Drew? Will, how often?
3 times a week, you know, as an avid listener. 3 times a week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday.
Okay. Thanks for listening. Good luck with all your bets. Week 4 in the National Football League.